Hey, Realtors, this is Eric Peguero, and in this episode, we're going to talk about new home safety laws that you need to know about. As of July 1st of this year, there's new safety laws that come out about protecting your home against fire and carbon monoxide. And I'm sitting here today with Montgomery County Fire Chief Scott Goldstein. Chief, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Eric. And as you say, there's July 1st, 2019, carbon monoxide alarms are laws coming in place and will be in there to help us, help you and our residents.
You know, before we even start, I want to thank you for a couple of things. One, I definitely want to thank you for your service. You guys are in it every single day and you risk your lives to save our lives and our property. So thank you so much on behalf of us and Montgomery County residents, GCAR, for your dedication to our county and our community.
It's our pleasure as the 2,700 men and women of Montgomery County Fire Rescue to be able to serve our residents and the visitors and people that commute through Montgomery County. So it's a great honor and thank you.
Montgomery County Fire and Rescue Services actually responds to 120,000 calls a year?
Just a tad over that, about 350 calls a day.
Wow. So you guys are super busy.
We are.
So 350 times a day, you put your lives on the line for us.
That's correct. Picking up someone who has fallen, taking someone to the hospital, putting out a fire, or, you know, inevitably getting someone out of an elevator that's trapped or someone out of a tree or, you know, the inevitable cat or animal out of a precarious situation as well.
And as you know, GCAR is committed to educating not only our members, but our consumers and our community on home safety. And I want to thank you on behalf of GCAR for your commitment to helping us do that.
And this is an outreach towards one of my primary goals, preventing the 911 call. Having these alarms and having these systems in place at home is a way that our residents can improve their safety and ideally prevent having an emergency or being made aware of an emergency when it's very small and minor.
Again, on behalf of GCAR, I just want to let you know that we're always here as a resource to educate and help out in any way we can, even putting out some fires if you need help.
We're always looking for volunteers. Anybody from the age of 16 on up, there's no age limit, there's no age cap. Anybody who's able and willing to support their community administratively or operationally are definitely interested to seek out their local fire department.
You know, I went to the new facility you guys have off.
It's not for school. That's our new training academy.
That is a beautiful training academy. State of the art.
It is indeed. We were just up the street here from the GCAR office for about 45 years on Great Seneca Highway. That facility served us well, but had aged over that time. And we're rolling into about 3 years now since we moved to the Snoffer School facility at our new training academy, where all public safety training, including fire rescue, law enforcement, and driver's training for our ride-on bus operators occurs. It's a great opportunity and great facility.
So let's get right into it, Chief. Let's start with the most recent developments. Tell us about that law that is enacted on the 1st.
July 1st, 2019, Montgomery County law kicks in that requires a carbon monoxide alarm. And I want to use the word alarm because the word alarm and detector kind of get used interchangeably, but practically it is an alarm because it sounds a notification. But the carbon monoxide alarm requirement kicks in for residences in Montgomery County where there's a fuel-burning appliance or a enclosed parking space. So it's very important to understand carbon monoxide. It's colorless. It's odorless. You cannot detect it by yourself. Only these alarms and these sensors can make you aware that it's present. But what it comes from is incomplete combustion of fossil fuel. So if you have natural gas, you have propane, you have a wood-burning stove, pellet stove, anything that's giving you a blue or orange flame. So if you have a stove, a hot water heater, a dryer, a furnace, a fireplace, or any type of fireplace insert, anything that makes a blue or orange flame can produce carbon monoxide. And your car is running on gasoline or diesel fuel, but carbon monoxide is a very large emission from your car exhaust. Naturally, your all-electric car does not do that, but the traditional petroleum-based car has carbon monoxide as an exhaust. So that's why this law is prescribed where you have a fuel-burning appliance in the structure or an enclosed parking area. because we see time and time again the car accidentally left running in the enclosed garage. That carbon monoxide from the car migrates into the house or into the apartment building, and then people start becoming impacted by that carbon monoxide.
So let me ask you, when you say impacted, what does that mean?
So that's exactly a great question. The signs and symptoms when you are awake of carbon monoxide poison are often referred to as flu-like symptoms, nausea, redness. People believe they start having flu-like symptoms. But if you're asleep at the time this poisoning or this exposure is occurring, you will not awake. You will not react to it, and you can, and people do succumb to carbon monoxide poisoning in their sleep and never were aware of the circumstance. So we would frequently get a call for a sick person. You know, if it's the fall, summer, fall or winter time, it'd be flu-like symptoms. Someone saying, "I have the flu," but you're nauseated, you're vomiting, you feel flushed and red. So people call us and say they're sick, and we have a canary detector, a single gas detector that we carry on our EMS equipment bags. And when we walk in your house or your apartment building or in your place of business, and that detector goes off, our people know, our people are trained that that's telling me we have carbon monoxide present. And we're treating both the medical situation, the person who's being poisoned by the carbon monoxide, but we also have a hazardous material situation. And we need to expand our focus and address that at a priority. So carbon monoxide is what this new law kicks in and provides protection for.
Should we put it inside the home or inside the garage, or where do we put this?
So the again, if you're burning a fuel-burning appliance or you have an enclosed parking space, you need one of these alarms. The law requires you to have one on every level of the structure. The critical point about this carbon monoxide alarm is having it closest to the sleeping area, because where are you at your most vulnerable when you're asleep? So naturally, if you have a three-level residence, you may, you know, by the law have one on the basement, the first floor, and the second level. That's what the law requires. But the most critical placement of a carbon monoxide alarm is outside of the sleeping area, so that when you are asleep, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it starts to chirp, not chirp, but physically go into alarm, you're going to hear it. You won't hear it if it's downstairs in the basement or if it's out in the garage. So that's the most important part of where you're most vulnerable, outside of your sleeping areas, where you're at nighttime. But the specific part, different from the smoke alarms, because we have definitely a different placement. Smoke alarms need to be placed high on the sidewalls or up on the ceiling because of how smoke rises. That's not the same for carbon monoxide alarm.
Really?
Carbon monoxide disperses itself into the air pretty evenly, so it does not pool at the ceiling nor at the floor. It diffuses itself evenly throughout the air inside the residence. So it is not predicated that the carbon monoxide alarm be high or low or anything specific. So there's a lot of different options out there. Residents can buy combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarms so that they're going to be mounted on the ceiling, because it's doing both smoke and carbon monoxide. Or the resident can buy a standalone carbon monoxide alarm. Some of these are coming with the new 10-year battery, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But they also have ones that are plug-ins. That's been present for the longest time on carbon monoxide alarms. So this detector is going to plug right into the outlet on the wall. Some of them have a digital display. Some of them just give you a light indicating that they're on. So that detector is going to be, or that alarm is going to be down at about that 2-foot level. So it's variable where it has. Just most importantly, be present and outside the sleeping areas, as well as all levels of the home.
What kind of homes are affected by this law?
If you have an all-electric house, meaning you have electric heat, electric hot water heater, and you do not have a fireplace or an enclosed parking area, you do not need the carbon monoxide alarm. But if you have a fuel burning appliance, range, oven, hot water heater, fireplace, clothes dryer, or you have a wood burning stove, pellet stove, or an enclosed parking area, garage, you need carbon monoxide alarm.
Okay. And if my clients have any questions or anything like that or want more information, who should they contact?
First of all, contacting 311 in most jurisdictions is going to get them a knowledge base or reference information, as well as mcfrs.org/MCSafe, MCSafe in Montgomery County. That's our web resource where you can get all of our safety information.
Chief, I know there was a lot of people involved in this, from GCAR, Councilmember Rice, yourself. How did this all come together?
Carbon monoxide deaths have been very alarming because they are very surprising and they happen with a surprising amount of frequency. So it was a collaboration between Councilmember Rice, Councilmember Elrich, the members of GCAR, as well as Montgomery County Fire Rescue that enabled this law to be passed to implement carbon monoxide alarms being present in residential structures. So it's definitely an advancement, as we've had in this community smoke alarm requirement for 40 years now. We're advancing that to the other step by having carbon monoxide alarms as a part of that home safety network.
And I'm sure that, as everybody is aware, if you could talk to us a little bit more about the ongoing awareness campaign.
As we roll out the July implementation 2019 of carbon monoxide alarms, I've worked collectively with Councilmember Rice to do some PSAs, to do some media outreach so that people are made aware of these alarm requirements and can be able to provide the capabilities there. Again, also remember, these alarms have a shelf life, or they have a functional life. As we'll talk about smoke alarms in 10 years, that's not absolutely the case. So some of these may be 3 years, some of these may be 5 years. So all of your users, all of your agents, as well as the residents, should look on the back of the detector and under the back of the alarm and see what the date is and make sure that they're aware of the operational capabilities of the alarm.
And I'd also like to let our listeners know, realtors, that GCAR is doing an ongoing consumer education campaign. So please log into our website and you could definitely get some more information about it. Very important for us. Chief, thank you so much for that information. And I want to follow up with the Maryland-wide smoke detector law that's been in the books since about 2013.
Correct.
Right?
The law changed in 2013, and then the absolute implementation date was January 1st of 2018. So we're about a year and a half since the law changed and required 10-year alarms with sealed batteries. And there's a two-part requirement there. And it's very important because we would time and time again see a couple different scenarios. One scenario is the alarm is up on the ceiling. It looks like it works. You press the button, it may chirp, but it then doesn't chirp again. It's 20, 30 years old. And that alarm, as with any other electronics, is aging and is not becoming as efficient and effective at giving you that early warning. But the other problem was on the changing of the battery, when it went off in a nuisance situation, someone burnt the pizza in the kitchen or the turkey, you reached up and you took the alarm off the ceiling, you pulled the battery out of it, and you set it down on the counter. Somebody, maybe one of your children, came along and took the battery and went on and put it in their remote control car or their Walkman. That dates us a little bit back. But the alarm was present, but the battery was missing. Or the alarm was up there, and because the battery had already passed its functional and service life, that it was no longer effective. You know, what if you were out of town for a month on a vacation and an alarm chirped for effectively, you know, a week, telling you that it was going, you know, and weak and it was depleted, but when you got back, the chirping had already passed. Right. If you didn't check your alarm, you didn't change your battery, you never would have known that that device up on the ceiling was absolutely providing you no safety. So it's very much important that it's not older than 10 years, as well that it has that sealed battery.
When you say sealed battery, is that the batteries that come like tooled and they're wrapped up and you can't either throw them away or?
So each one of the alarms is a different function. When you open it out of the case, there's going to be some type of pull tab. There's no longer a battery door. There's no longer a place where you can put in a 9-volt battery or two or three AA batteries. There's physically an enclosure and it's in place. Right here on this one in front of me, there's a red tab. As I pull it, it removes the little prongs from the battery itself, and now that battery is energized and it's ready to go. It's a lithium ion by actual battery technology versus alkaline, so that's why it's getting that 10-year capability. But the detector itself may have been in the box or at your Home Depot or your local big box store for a year, but the battery hasn't been in play until you pull that tab.
So hence, that's the start date for the battery.
Correct. And all these smoke alarms have pretty small print, actually. They have a date on them. Even the very old ones traditionally also have a date on them. So when we say make sure they're newer than 10 years old, that means you have to get up on the chair or the ladder, pull it down, look at the back of it, and see what that date is, and ensure that your smoke alarm is no older today than 2009.
From what I understand, this law is actually one of the toughest laws in the country.
It is very significant, as well as providing a high level of protection, because we were seeing fire fatalities in structures. We had one in Montgomery County just last Thanksgiving. It was a double fatal fire, regretfully, where we had brand new smoke alarms in a package on a shelf. We also had a smoke alarm on the ceiling with a very, very dated battery in the alarm itself. Those alarms, the new one as well as the installed one, was not providing any level of alarming or a warning to those two residents. So that's why it's so very critical that you have the sealed battery, 10 years, and not older than a 10-year detector.
From what I understand, fire deaths, fatalities, have actually been going down in the state and the county. Am I right?
Absolutely, and that's ultimately our goal. These are preventable deaths. A death from a house fire, cause of death traditionally is smoke inhalation. Smoke inhalation is an accumulated poisoning and is one that is preventable by that early warning and that early alarm that the smoke alarm gives you. These fires today are growing faster and are burning much hotter and quicker than they did 15, 20, 30 years ago. And the reaction time to a fire in the kitchen, a fire in the bedroom, is much less than you and I had as we were growing up, much less than it was because of the environments. We're now dealing with synthetic materials in our couches and in our homes versus natural cottons and natural wools. Those are burning such faster and hotter that these fires are burning between 7 and 8 times quicker than they were, you know, just 20 years ago. That's why early alarm, early warning is critical.
With these new laws, I know that especially for realtors, it's very important to help our consumers understand this. How would you suggest that we as realtors help our clients become compliant with these laws?
It is complex, acknowledge that very, very well, because the laws here in Montgomery County are going to be a little bit different than maybe your agents in Prince George's or other communities. The age and the construction of the house predicates where the alarms must be and which alarms must be hardwired versus which alarms can be strictly battery operated. So we have a couple different matrices and there's a reference point, because prior to 1975, there was a law that said they just had to be battery operated and they needed to be, you know, on each level of the house. Then over the years, as people became much more aware of the complexities and the importance thereof, the alarms began having to be hardwired, interconnected, and then battery backuped. So it's very much an important fact that their agent, as well as the resident, knows the age of the house, because the age of the house lets them hit into the chart and figure out what is the requirement. Now, I will very frankly say the best level of protection is hardwired, interconnected with battery backup. And here's exactly why. Again, I go back to my three-level house. Your basement, first floor, and second floor. You have a smoke detector on every level, and you have a smoke detector in every sleeping room. That's the highest level of the law. Every level and inside every sleeping room. So now the smoke alarm in the basement near the dryer starts to alarm because the closest dryer has caught on fire. You're upstairs two floors away in the bedroom. Your smoke alarm goes off. You don't know why, but it's because it's connected to the one in the basement. And it's very early detection, very early alarming that there's a smoke situation, which means fire, down in the basement. So the highest level of protection that your agents as well as the residents could have is hardwired, interconnected, and battery backup. But that is a requirement based upon certain age of construction. Older homes only had to have battery alarms.
With the old 9-volt battery?
Well, that's what it was prior to this new law that went into effect in 2018. Now all these alarms have to have the 10-year battery, and they have to be newer than 10 years old. And that goes to the hardwire detectors, who means hardwire alarms as well. They still will have a battery backup, but they have to be newer than 10 years.
How do you feel about the wireless systems?
They're good. You know, you have a couple different brands out there that are able to be networked into your home wireless system, and they provide that type of alarming. They've been tested. They're part of UL, as an example, Underwriters Lab, and very well provide that level of capability. So make sure, like you're buying an extension cord, you're buying a rated device, Underwriters Lab, or that little UL logo on it, and good to go.
So as a realtor, and I'm about to do a listing, for example, is there a way that I have access to that chart to see and make sure that that house is in compliance?
Absolutely. MC Safe, the same location, you can find this chart. And again, it outlines where they need to be, what type of alarms they need to be. So it is important to know that age of the house. And one of the things that usually trips people up is what happens when the home inspector comes through and says, one of your smoke alarms isn't working, Mr. Eric. And Mr. Eric says, okay, I'll go ahead and get that replaced. Well, that's part of the electrical system of the house. That's traditionally through realtor and home repair situations needs to be done by an electrician. So the agent needs to contact an electrician to get that done, but you want to replace like brand alarms with like brand alarms. So a first alert detector cannot be substituted for a kitty detector because they're interconnected. They talk to each other. And branding and having the same product line. So that's something that your electrician, who's a licensed electrician, who's going to know the difference. He or she's going to look at the one they got. Okay, we have this brand. I know I need to replace it with the same brand. So it is very important to do that.
The question that pops into my head, is there any brand better than the other?
Absolutely not. All smoked alarms that are out there on the consumer market, again, when you see that they have, you know, your UL rating on them, they've been tested, they're absolutely safe and absolutely the right product to get. And it's not dependent upon this brand or that brand. So $30 is what we're talking about here. A single function alarm, so a single smoke alarm or a single carbon monoxide alarm, roughly $30. You can go to your big box stores, your Costco, your discount wholesalers, and probably buy two for $30. But we're talking about $30 for each individual piece. And again, it's going to, if you get the combination smoke and carbon monoxide together, it's going to be a little bit more. But again, you would spend $60 to have two of them in the same room. So naturally, but consumer appliance, these are very low-cost safety tools that provide an extreme level of safety to the residents. And one other question that people frequently talk about is the difference between an ionization and a photoelectric detector. And it's changing. Some would articulate that an ionization detector is better for the fast-growing fire, and a photoelectric detector is better suited to detect a slow-growing or a smoldering fire. So a few minutes ago, I outlined that fires are burning faster, fires are growing faster. So what may have been the case, and what was the case years ago, where you could drop a cigarette butt into the couch or the sofa or the bedding material, and that fire smolder for a really long time, and it produces a different style of smoke. It produces smoke differently. That's where the function of the photoelectric versus the ionization detector had benefits. But fires are burning fast, hotter, and quicker nowadays. So the ionization detector is equally as effective as your photoelectric. And it's not as important, or it's not a key factor to say, what type of smoke alarm am I getting here? You know, I have an ionization one here in this box, but it's not as critical to say, in my kitchen I need to have this style, and in my bedroom I need to have this style, because we're experiencing much faster burning fires. The most important part is having a smoke alarm there, and having that early warning to the residents, to the household guest.
So, Chief, one thing, not to do anything with this law, but the fire, especially when we're talking about fire safety, the fire department's job isn't necessarily protection of the property first, is the putting out of that fire. So you're not there to save my couch.
So I'm not going to save your couch first, Eric. I'm going to save your life first. Life safety is our first objective.
So in other words, there's going to be a lot of water put into the property. What I'm trying to get to is that taking these steps are very important, especially if you've invested a lot of money and a lot of time into your property.
So life safety is my first priority for all of my personnel. We're going to make a rescue, get the people that are in harm's way out of the structure first before we advance a hose line and work on applying water to the fire. So we have to get the people out of the harm's way. Life safety is our first priority. Property conservation is our next priority. We can conserve property by putting the fire out. We put the fire out, we put water on the fire, the heat starts to dissipate, smoke starts to go away, and we're working on the property conservation process from that point forward. Another part of property conservation is water damage, is the ability to mitigate the effects of where that water goes. And high-rises or multifamily residentials is traditionally an event where that becomes a big problem, because as the water cascades from the ninth floor down through the utility chases, it goes very fast and spreads. And then in environmental conservation, we do worry about and make sure that, you know, we're not doing any environmental damage with our fire operations, but we had to do life safety first and then put the fire out and then mitigate the property situations.
And I think that's important for especially consumers to know, homeowners to know, or anybody who has a residence, that a simple $30 or $60 investment will save thousands of dollars on the other side.
Absolutely. The point here is when these alarms go off, people need to engage. They need to react. Primarily, exit the structure. Don't disbelieve, don't discount the alarm and think it's a nuisance situation. React to it. Especially the carbon monoxide alarm. When that alarm goes off, you as the resident, you as an agent, have no means to determine why that alarm is going off. It's for carbon monoxide and it's going off. So react to the alarm.
And what should we do with carbon monoxide?
Exit the structure. Just like the smoke alarm.
Not open windows.
Not open windows. Opening the window feeds oxygen to the fire.
Well, how about to the carbon monoxide?
It will help dissipate the accumulation of the carbon monoxide, but it doesn't fix the problem. The best way of fixing the problem on a carbon monoxide situation is turning off the appliance or turning off the producer of the carbon monoxide. And that may be turning off the hot water heater or the fireplace or the dryer. But the first thing when these alarms go off is exit the structure, call 911 from outside the structure, and do not re-enter the structure. Don't go back in for fill in the blank. Don't go back in the structure until the fire department arrives, because whatever it is, it can be replaced. Whatever it is, it can be obtained after the emergency has been mitigated. But exit the structure, call 911 from the outside, and then stay outside until, you know, the emergency responders arrive.
Chief, I want to thank you so much for your time. I think it's something that we definitely need to not only think about and look at our home and see that we are in compliance, but also trying to save our own property and our own lives first. Are there any final thoughts, anything you want to tell us?
You hit on compliance, and I want to make sure your agents, as well as anybody else listening, understands. We're not going to be aiming for and going for fines and negative impacts for folks that are not presently having the right type of alarms in their house or not having a carbon monoxide alarm. So Fire Rescue Service is going to aim for education. That's our primary focus. So as an agent, as a homeowner, you go through a home purchase, home inspection situation. Maybe the home inspector says you need to have this. The contract says it is in compliance. Our main goal is education and safety. Now, clearly, the component of the law, this is not a law, meaning the smoke alarm situation. This is not an alarm that we're going to do door-to-door inspections on. Not going to do door-to-door assessment of, are there 2-year-old alarms or 12-year-old alarms in the residence. So we do home safety checks for folks that reach out to us. They can do it through 311. They can do it through MC Safe. And we have an online request form. So they do it. We do that. We come out and we do home safety checks. We come out and target those that may be elderly and seniors and aging in place. We have a different group that comes out and focuses not specifically on smoke alarms, but entire home safety situations. Because a grab handle, appropriate lighting, maybe the removal of the nice throw rug, that's a trip hazard to our aging parent or our loved one. Those types of things are ways to prevent the 911 call. So those are services that we offer. So reach out through us through Montgomery County 311 or that website, which is, you know, mcfrs.org/MCSafe.
Once again, Chief, thank you so much for your time. And as the Chief said, you can definitely go to mcfrs.org/MCSafe to get more information.
Thank you for listening to Real Talk with GCAR. As always, we hope you found this podcast as another resource from your Greater Capital Area Association of Realtors, keeps you informed, educated, and motivated. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like to hear us cover, or even if you'd like to be a guest on our podcast, please send us an email to communications@gcar.com. And remember, the Real Talk with GCAR podcast can be heard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on your favorite device, right from our website at gcar.com. And make sure you subscribe to our GCAR YouTube channel, like us on Facebook at GCAR2, and on Twitter at GCAR Now. Thank you for listening.